Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Welcome to another episode of eLaborate Topics. I am your host, Lona Small. eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself and my co-hosts, Stephanie Whitehead and Taiwana Wilson, come to you to bring your topics to help you to excel both inside and outside the lab. And today I'm really excited because I have with me Michael Kemp. Michael is a manager of lab information systems at LifeBridge Health, and I'm really excited because I consider Michael a friend because he was so good to me when he worked at my organization. When I requested reports or anything like that, Michael was always there, ready to understand our challenges and ready to help us with whatever we need. And I'm excited because this is a great opportunity for medical lab professionals who are looking at different options when you're thinking about next steps. So lab information system is a great option, and Michael will be talking to us about that. So Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mona. I appreciate you giving me the invite. I'm happy to be here. I'm glad that we can actually talk about something that is a little bit sort of outside the laboratory, but still contained in the laboratory. So this is a great moment for me.
Yeah, I think so. And we on the show, we're really trying to open up all the different options that are there. It's available. A lot of times we just don't know about it, how we can use our skills as medical lab professionals to, you know, a lot of people after a while, you get tired of doing the same thing, but you still want to support medical lab professionals. So Michael, just tell the listeners a little bit about your lab journey and how you got to where you are today as a manager of lab information system.
Yeah, so my journey for getting into the manager of the LIS, the laboratory information system, started when I was young. I actually have two big passions. One is computers, the other is the laboratory. So when I was younger, let's just start with the computers. When I was younger, my brother, his girlfriend gave me a computer when I was in fourth grade, and this is back in like 1991. I remember that the cost of just the computers were expensive, and they were large. They were not small like the ones we have now. Mm-hmm. So when she gave me that home computer, there's a lot of things that you had to know. This, it wasn't the same as right today where you can go in and click and you can just start up the computer and it's Windows and it presents everything. All you get is a DOS screen back in the night in like 1991, and you would have to learn how to program if you wanted to do something with a computer. And the one thing I wanted to do was always, I like playing games. So she gave me a big floppy disk, those old floppy disks, and she said, "Hey, why don't you learn how to play this computer game?" And she gave me Classic Concentration. I'm not sure if people know about Classic Concentration, but it's actually a TV show from the late 80s, the 90s, early 90s. It's about matching and problem solving. So that went hand in hand with my personality. So I spent hours playing those games, and I just loved the computer. It's just something that I've always done. So I practically am self-taught. Everything that I've never took any formal like computer classes or anything like that. Everything that I've learned through my journey for computers had been self-taught. When I was in high school, in college, I actually learned how to play jokes on my friends. So like I would be remote and I would eject their disk drive from my house when they were at their house. You know, I just played little jokes and I learned these things. Yeah, I learned these things just by going and reading and just being involved with computers. I later you know, of course, when you're in college, I went to college in 2000, I learned that you need a computer for college. And of course, if you have a computer for college, you also have to take care of it. But every week, I swear I was breaking my computer. There was something broken on it. So, and I would go to the support team, Gateway Support, and they would actually fix it for me. At some point, I just got tired of doing that, and I started taking them apart and figuring out how to use computers. And later, I just became a whiz at it. And then I also did a little side jobs where I actually helped some of my friends build computers and taught them how to do it. And that just became my thing in college. My passion for laboratory, it started in 11th grade when I took a chemistry class. I just love chemistry. It was something that just the experiments and watching Bunsen burners, like watching colors, different colors, and doing experiments. That was just the thing that I just enjoyed the most. Setting up titrations, just doing all that was just intriguing for me. And I became fascinated. So I asked my teacher, who was at the time, she was the chemistry teacher, but I asked her, you know, what did you do? How did you get to this place? And she said, you know, I'm a biochemist. I'm a biochemist. I went to school for biochemistry. I went to college for biochemistry. And I also did research, but later on I learned that I wanted to teach. So she gave me that information. And I, at the 11th grade, I started looking into biochemistry, and I was like, ha, it looks fun, but I don't think the teachers make a lot of money. So I started looking at other options, and I wanted to become a pharmacist. But she had such a good handle on everything she was doing, and she was a great teacher, that she actually influenced me to become a biochemist. So I went to Syracuse University. I graduated from there with a biochemistry degree. And I later went and did some environmental work, and I realized that this wasn't for me. So I wanted to go back to pharmacy school. So I applied to pharmacy school, to University of Maryland and University of Buffalo, and they sent me something called a medical technology brochure. And I didn't know what it was at this point. I was young. There were so many different opportunities for careers. But when I started reading this brochure and it said, hey, there's microbiology, there's hematology, there's blood bank, it really sparked my interest. And I was like, okay, forget about pharmacy. This is what I want to do. So I enrolled in the University of Maryland, and I loved being in the lab. And this was just like the best thing ever. I've never seen a person like look under a microscope and look at blood cells, and you're counting it, and you're actually helping people when you're looking at these. So once I graduated from University of Maryland with a med tech degree, I really liked micro the most. So I was trying to pursue to get a job in micro, but I didn't get that at first. So I became a generalist for a couple years, but then I got the opportunity to go to Johns Hopkins, where I was in microbiology, and I served there for about, let's say, about 4 years. I was at, I was employed at Johns Hopkins for microbiology for 4 years. And at that time, I still loved computers, so I became the webmaster for the microbiology department. It allowed me to show the skill that I had in the IT section, and also I was doing good in the microbiology, so it went hand to hand. And I've always wanted to marry IT with the lab, and I never had the opportunity. So one day I was like on the bench, you know, working up cultures, and I said, hey, I want music. But the computers were locked down, and of course, you know, I'm good with computers, so I said, hey, maybe there's a way for me to get computers. This is a full disclaimer for all listeners. Don't do this if you want to keep your job. Well, I figured out how to get Pandora on the computer. And I was listening to music, and one of my coworkers came up and said, how did you do that? So I taught him how to do it too. Later, soon, like in the next week or so, everybody in the lab was actually listening to Pandora. So my manager walks in, and she sees that everyone has music, and they're listening to Pandora, and she wonders how that happened. And of course, everyone said it was me. This is where the opportunity came in, where she didn't reprimand me. She didn't actually penalize me. She brought me into the office, gave me a talk, and she said, hey, I see that you're great with computers. There's actually a position that I think you should apply to, and that was for the laboratory information systems. And there I actually got the job, not the first time, but the second time I actually got the job. And I went into that field and I loved it. It was just a wonderful experience, and it's been great for me going forward. So.
Wow, that's awesome. What a journey. The good thing about it is that what I see from your journey that you always had that natural interest in the things that you're doing today. You're always curious, inquisitive about science and about computing. And sometimes, too, you may have the curiosity, but if you're not given the opportunity, you won't really know what you love. And for you, you were given a computer at an early age, so you could kind of pull it apart and, you know, figure out what you could do with it. And so that's really an interesting journey because, when I coach people, you know, although I talk about unique competence, if you haven't had that chance to explore your unique competence, you won't really know what it is. And it's hard for you to make these decisions when it comes to jobs. But you had that opportunity with one senior teacher, the curiosity about the flame and the Bunsen burner and exploring different options, biochemistry, pharmacy, and then eventually medical technology. But what I found really interesting is the leadership of your manager. We have choices when we're encountered different scenarios. Of course, there should be coaching because you went against the rule. But it was great that your manager could see way beyond that and see talent in you and gave you that opportunity. Of course, yeah, we can't, that's not something that everybody will be lucky with. May not have such a good manager as yours, but, you know, luck was on your side. So that's interesting.
Yes.
Wow. So in the lab, I know you have, now you're not fully in the lab, you still get to work with, you know, some of the things that we need in the lab in terms of IT, but for you, or even now that you're working in the field, what would you say is your favorite part of being in lab information system?
I would like to say computers, but it isn't that. It's actually just servicing the laboratory. I think just getting the relationship with the lab techs and, you know, the people who are on the bench who are actually doing the work, that's the relationship that I love having. When you're in a department, a lot of times you don't expand outside that department. So you're in hematology. A lot of times you don't go into microbiology, you don't get to know those, you know, those techs. But as an IT representative for the whole institution, you start to get to know everybody and on the bench and those clinical laboratory scientists that actually are running those tests. And a lot of times they are encountering IT problems, and it's my pride. It's always my pride to actually resolve their issues. I remember being on the bench and having IT problems and, you know, didn't know who to call on or relate to, but I'm always wanting to be there in the forefront to help them out and be that first person to help them solve their IT part, so their IT problems. So that's my favorite part. The other part that I like is being that outreach for the laboratory, you know, being the liaison between the laboratory and the other IT part of the world or the outside of the organization. I like being that. I like having being the person who can communicate what the laboratory needs and bringing in the right people from the laboratory to make these decisions when there's a higher IT decisions. Because a lot of times you can exclude the laboratory. We're an essential part of the whole enterprise whenever you're dealing with any hospital. But sometimes it's like if you're left out, you don't feel that way. And you just don't get that attention that you need. And then if they're making decisions without you and it actually affects you later down the road, it's a big problem. So it's always good to have somebody either on the IT side or just presence outside of the laboratory to help make sure that the laboratory is heard with any kind of changes or any kind of decisions that should be included in there.
Thanks so much, Mike. And I know from experience that you were always willing to help whenever there's a problem. We could feel comfortable that Mike is going to go the extra mile to try to solve that problem. So thanks for being there. And another thing, thanks for being an advocate for the lab, because yes, we get left out so many times and we are usually the afterthought. And then after there's a challenge, then they're like, oh, so we didn't include the lab in the decision making. The lab was not at the table. So I'm glad that ITE many times is at the table. And if you're like an advocate for the lab, you'll bring the lab to the table. So thanks so much for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So in terms of lessons learned, I like to bring, you know, professionals who have been there, done that to the podcast so that people who are interested in those professions can learn from you. So for you, what are some of the lessons you have learned along the way that you wouldn't mind sharing with our listeners?
I think the lesson that I've learned is be ready to learn new things and don't sell yourself short. When I first got involved with the LIS team, I remember getting that position, and I was so happy to have that position because this is exactly what I was looking for, something that marries the laboratory and computers and IT. But I was totally overwhelmed. I remember being involved in a meeting, and they started throwing around acronyms, the HIS, the LIS, the, you know, this a ton of acronyms, OVX, and just things that I didn't understand. And I felt overwhelmed at the time, of course, because you're presenting yourself into a new world. But after some time and give yourself the time to actually learn these things, you can proceed to establish what are patterns and what matters when people are having these conversations. It took me a couple weeks, and I started contributing to these conversations. It was something that I, you know, naturally had. I started talking about it, like, hey, what about doing this instead of that? So if I sell myself short, I would never been able to put myself in that position. I would have just probably gave up at that point. So you just don't want to do that. You got to be willing to learn these new things. The other thing is, you know, when you're in the laboratory and as a tech, your communication is totally different from what it is in like the IT world. So they use emails for everything. And I don't, as a bench tech, I remember as a microbiologist just sitting there checking my emails only when it was like lab week, because I was waiting for what's the gift or what's the surprise I'm going to have. Or you knew that there was going to be something like a raise or something major in there. And I would check my emails at that time. But the communication for somebody in the IT world, it was like everything was communicated through the emails. And I was more personal. I like talking to people. I like picking up the phone. And their way of working was just emails. My way of working was through the phone. So I figured out a way to make it work for me. I started talking to people on the phone, but also sending, following up with an email. I'm sure that was a pain at times, but you start to learn what you need to do and what is good for you and your colleagues. So that's the big thing. I think the lesson learned is be ready to learn new things and don't sell yourself short.
Sounds great, because a lot of times we take the same skills from one job and we move to another job and think that that's the same skills that's going to give us success. But we have to learn new things in order to be successful. We have had those conversations about technical experts. You're really good on the bench and you move into a leadership role and you're like, I was so good as a bench tech. How come I'm not succeeding as a leader? But there's a whole different toolbox as a leader that you'd have to learn and be open to learn. And I think that's great lessons right there. Okay, so what would you say success has taught you? And then I'll ask you what failure has taught you. That is kind of in the same breath, maybe in a different way that we can learn from you, or, you know, if we're looking to moving into leadership or moving into another area of our role, how can you help with some of the successes that you've had, what you've learned from successes, and what you've learned from failure? How, you know, would you want to share that?
Sure. Success has taught me, you know, to be creative and innovative and just think outside the box. So, you know, you want to keep your laboratory relevant and up to date to things that are happening around. So take COVID, we all adapted and we started, you know, changing and being creative about ways that we had to make things work for this, you know, for COVID. So it was just a whole new presence of creativity that was happening amongst ourselves and the teams, and everybody had to change. So success has taught me definitely to be creative, to explore new ideas. I think that you can't just eliminate everything. I think you put everything at the table. So for me, I like to have my team, you know, present everything. No idea is a bad idea. So you just bring it out and see if we can scratch it out, if it's something that totally wouldn't work. But if it's up there, I think you talk about it and you start negotiating and seeing if there's other things that people have thought of. So explore the new ideas. Make sure you take those challenges. That's a big thing when you're talking about success. I see every challenge as an opportunity. So you can either face it forward and actually give a resolution to it, or be creative and find a way to work around it. But every challenge is going to be an opportunity on the other end. Even if you're failed, even if it doesn't work, you still have to take those creative things and realize that, hey, this won't work. This is not the path that we should take. As far as failures has taught me, I guess I don't want to sound cliche, but I say never give up. So I think that when I first got the LIS application, when I first put my application for LIS, I didn't get the job. So that was kind of heartbreaking for me. It was like, oh my gosh, I thought I was the candidate. I thought I was the perfect person. But there was other opportunities for that LIS team, and they just picked up somebody else different than they just needed at that time. But if I would have gave up, I would have never became an LIS analyst. But what I did was I would send every 3 months, I would send that manager an email saying, hey, what do I need to make sure that I'm going to be that person for you for the next LIS analyst job opening that you have? Do you want me to take any courses? Is there anything else I can do? My biggest goal was to marry my passions. I wanted the laboratories. I wanted to be doing computers. And this was it. I knew that this is what I wanted. So, but I wanted to ask, you know, I asked him what strength did I need? You know, I kept on going. I kept on fighting for it. I didn't give up. You know, later on, I'm sure he was getting like, hey, you know, you're sending a lot of emails. But at the time, he knew that I was interested. He knew that I wanted that job. So that gave him the opportunity to say, you know what, Mike is probably the best person for this position. He's hungry. He's thinking of things and he's trying to be, you know, creative and on his end of getting involved. So that's what I say that I learned from my failures and from my success.
Well, I think that is such an awesome share, you know, being persistent and knowing that that's what you really want. And even when you get no's, you don't just stop there. I think that's such an awesome share, Mike. So what would you say would be the strengths that you feel that are important for you as a successful leader, as a manager of a team in LIS?
I think a strength for me will be definitely patience. So, you know, that not everybody's familiar with computers or will understand. As I said before, when I got into that world, I totally was lost. I was just like, what's going on? You know, these acronyms, you're telling me to do something and I don't understand it. If you're patient with just your team and with the people that you're actually helping, so I know that there's times where people on the bench need my help, and I can blast through and say, hey, this is what you need to do. Click here, and you're done. But I always see it as a teaching situation. I feel like you can teach someone how to do it. Take your time, teach someone how to do it, and they will actually pass it along. They can actually give it to another person who's on the bench who encounters the same problem, so that you, next time, you feel great because you taught so many people how to do it, and now they know how to, they don't have to run to you for that answer. But on their end, they also have the power to change it and fix things on their self, by themselves. And who knows, that might just even spark their interest in becoming an LIS analyst. But that was like, patience is always a big thing for me. I think that helps. I'm patient with my team. I know that nothing is done overnight, and it shouldn't be done overnight. If you want them to do it correctly in the lab, you can't really mess up. There's not too many, too much room for errors, and you want to be patient, making sure that they get the tools that they need to do their job. I say the other thing is trust. At a young age, I've learned about trust, and that has been a big thing about my strengths in my journey. My background is kind of unique because when I was in college, every summer I would actually take on 20 youth kids, I'm sorry. And what I would do, their age range from 14 to 18, but what I would do is we would go around the city and we would clean up the neighborhoods. We would clean up carts, we would clean up different areas. And I remember at the time, you know, I was like 20, 21. Sometimes, you know, I'm impatient, you know, I'm young. And being in charge of 20 kids along with two other supervisors, but I was the main lead, you start learning that you have to be patient with the group, because I know that they didn't want to weed whack, or they didn't want to mow lawns, or they didn't want to pick up trash. They were thinking about something else. They were thinking about, hey, when I'm going to go home and see my girlfriend, or when I can go home and play the game. But I learned that you had to be patient. You had to be patient with them. You had to trust them. So those are two things that I've learned to do and evolved in my leadership skills that really helped me, you know, go forward and show that my team that, hey, I do trust you. I do understand that you are working through this thing and you're going to get it right. So my past history and my background really helped me out with that.
Great, great, great strengths. I like the idea of you not only telling people what to do, but showing them how to do it and empowering them so that they can do it on their own and making them feel good about themselves when they can do it on their own. So I love that, and trusting people to get the work done, being patient with them, some great strengths for leaders. So I know we probably don't have a lot more time, but I have a few more questions.
Okay.
Did you have a mentor? I know it seemed as if you yourself was a mentor with those kids, but did you have a mentor for yourself coming up, or even, you know, at some level, at where you are, maybe while you're working, you know, as a manager or as a LIS tech or a med tech, was there a mentor in your life?
So not for my professional, but definitely when I was growing up, there was definitely mentors. Professionally, I had the luckiest, I'm being lucky, that I actually had great managers. So like I had Donna Marquez, who was one of your guests, on the podcast. She is a great mentor. She's a great person that actually I image a lot of the things that I do, as a leader off of her. Cause she trusts, she understands, and she's very, she puts her hands in when she needs it. The opportunities are when they're there. She helps. I think she's a great mentor for me, even though it's not like it's a one-to-one, but she's the person that I actually look up to, professionally. And I get a lot of my leadership styles and methods from her. But when I was younger, there was this like so many opportunities for me, that helped me get to where I'm at now. So in sixth grade, I had the opportunity to get into something called the Young Scholars Liberty Partnership Program, which is just for youth who are doing great in school, but don't have the means to get into college. And they helped me with mentorships. They helped me with just like homework, anything that was personally going on. So kudos to them, because without them, I don't think that I would have the ability to do everything that I've done in my younger years. I also was, when I was in college, at Syracuse, I had the opportunity to get into something where, it was just for people who were doing great in school. It was called African American Male Congress. If you were, an African American male and you were doing good in school and you were the top 10 of the college or the university, you actually got inside of this program. You had to apply, and they would take you through a 6-week course of going through leadership training, teaching you how to do everything from eating the correct way to speaking the right way to how you should act in public, just things that a leader would do. And then you would learn the leadership qualities, and they had retreats and everything. So those were the things that were long-lasting for me as I am now, and that's what helped me get into the positions that I am.
Wow, I can see that great, great impact that all of that had on you. So what about, say, our listeners, medical lab professionals looking for opportunity to get into LIS? What advice would you give them?
I think the first thing I would say is don't cut yourself short, of course, but show that you have interest. Go to the LIS analyst and, you know, show some interest in what they're doing. Maybe it's just looking at their daily duties, just asking questions. You'll find out if it's something that you enjoy or something that you just don't want to deal with. But I think that you take the first step is just show some interest. For me, if there was anybody who's on the bench and they actually showed interest in LIS, I would actually devote my time and give them that information that they need so that they can see if this is something that they want to pursue or would like to get involved with. So I think that first step is just to show some interest. The next thing is, I don't think you always have to look for doing something in the laboratory. So there is many IS and IT people who are doing things in the hospital that came from the laboratory. I think the laboratory, you can always, anybody from the lab can always learn the things outside the lab, because we have such a demand on our procedures and our methods that we are particular about everything that we do. So I think that it's easier for us to explore outside of the laboratory. And you just don't have to settle for something that's in the laboratory. A lot of times you can expand out, and it's nice to see, like I have some colleagues who were in the laboratory, and now they're the head of orders. So they're teaching the providers how to order things in system and making those orders available. There's another guy who's in the interface team, and he does nothing but interfaces. Yes, it involves the laboratory, but he also does the nursing bedside interfaces. So anything for EKGs, he does that. So he expanded his mindset outside of the laboratory, but his heart is still in the lab. Again, I think it's easier if you're looking for an LIS position. I think it's always easier for us to grab somebody who knows the lab and teach him the IT part, and then to grab somebody from IT and try to teach him the laboratory part. Because the laboratory, it's such a vast knowledge. There's so many things that we would have to teach that person if they just came from the IT part. And so much from the laboratory, you're explaining the IT part on a laboratory basis. So there's many opportunities out there. I think that you just have to figure out what you want, but be the first thing is just show some interest and show that you want to take the initiative to learn it outside.
Awesome, awesome. Wow. So much value. I mean, this was an awesome conversation, Mike, and I know that our listeners will take away a lot from this. So what if our listeners wanted to learn more or stay connected with you? Where could they go, whether it's on social media, email, whatever, where could they go to be connected with you?
I'm an IT person, so practically if there's a way for you to find me, you can definitely go on to like LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm under Michael Camp. Also Instagram. You can find me on Instagram. So all the platforms, I do have a profile and I do check that frequently. I'm fine with, can I give out my email address?
if you don't mind.
Yeah. So I don't mind. Yes, you can reach me on Gmail at mccamp31@gmail.com if you want to just reach out and get some questions about the laboratory information system.
Wow, sounds so great. I really enjoyed this conversation, Mike, and thank you so very much for spending the time. I know you're busy. We just talked and you're in the middle of, you know, this is a change. The time is changing. There's a lot that IT has to be doing, and you actually spent this time with me. I'm really grateful that you did. I know your team, they're busy right now, and they're depending on you. So thank you so much for sharing the time with the audience, and I know you're passionate about sharing this field with other medical lab professionals, and I'm glad you guys got this opportunity to do so. So thank you so much.
No, thank you, Lona. I think you guys are doing a great job with this podcast. So thank you.
Yeah. So thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics. And you can always tune in for this episode, not only on Direct ImpactBroadcasting.com, but you can tune in on any of your favorite podcast platforms. And if you want to email us, you can email us at elaboratetopics@directimpactbroadcasting.com to give us ideas about some of the things you'd want us to talk about. Or if you want to be a guest on the show, we are open to that. So thank you so much. And until we talk again, have a great week. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.